Hey, everybody, welcome to episode 118 of the Apologue Podcast. I am your host, Simon Head. Today's podcast is brought to you in part by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial when you go to audibletrial.com/apologue. You can choose from over 180,000 titles, and you can have them for your iPhone, for your Android, or your Kindle Fire, or any MP3 player, really. You can go download your free audiobook today by going to audibletrial.com/apologue. Go there. This podcast is also brought to you using my affiliate program. You can go now. It's faster for Canadians to go to apologue.ca/Amazon, and it'll take you directly to the Amazon page. You don't need to worry about it. It is the Amazon page. Only what it does is attaches my little affiliate code to it. And what that does is every time you shop on Amazon, you're supporting the show. And it costs you no extra money, so it's win-win-win, right? Okay, do that. But if you're from either Canada, the United States, or the UK, you can locate your country by going to the homepage, the apologue.ca homepage, and click on those links on the right side. Bookmark the links, and every time you shop on Amazon, you can use those links and support the show. Like I said, costs no extra money. If you're interested in pledging to the show on a monthly basis, you can go to patreon.com/apologue. You can pledge as much or as little as you want on a monthly basis to help with hosting and gas fees. You can cancel at any time, and let's get that number up a bit, folks. Hey, I got a new store on my Insight Recorders site. So if you go to insightrecorders.com/3dprints, that's the number 3D, letter D, prints. And you can buy stuff that I 3D have designed and 3D printed. And everything is made one at a time. It's kind of neat. These things that I've been making lately are called lithopanes. And what they are is essentially, you take a picture and it 3D prints it, and it turns it into a 3D printed picture. And when you put it up to the light with backlight, it's your picture. It's pretty awesome. So go check it out. InsightRecorders.com/3dprints. Three, number three, D, letter D, prints. P-R-I-N-T-S. You can enter the coupon code podcast and get 10% off on your purchase. Insight Recorders also does online mixing. You can send your recorded album to Insight Recorders and will be mixed and mastered to add a professional touch to your recording. There's tons of other services there, and there's also other stores there. So if you want to pick up the new Rules record that came out, it's not new anymore. It came out like last year. You can go to insightrecorders.com and check on the web stores, and all those stores are there, and you can still purchase that album. It's an amazing album, by the way. You can buy a t-shirt by going to apologue.ca/shop. You can buy the Fourscore discography for $20. Don't forget to like and review the show. Give it some stars. Subscribe by going to iTunes. And give it 5 stars, please. You can catch up on all the news from the show by going to facebook.com/apologuepod. And you can follow me on Twitter at SimonHead666. Today on the show, I have Francesco Marone. Francesco actually reached out to me on just an email, because I just did this episode with Andre Codini from the band Lineout, and he heard it and said, hey, I want to be on your show. So he actually contacted me through normal emailed things. He plays in a band called GPL. He's the drummer. And not only that, the good thing I like about this band is that they do everything themselves. So they release their own records, they record their own records, and they promote their own records. And this is kind of important stuff with today's music business, is that you kind of have to know how to promote yourself. And I had a great conversation with a guy that I had met for the first time. And there's a little special moment in there. And if you can find it, he basically tells me what my show's about. And not even knowing, I didn't even give him kind of what the breakdown, what the show is. But listen for that, because it's kind of a special moment for me, because it's like, oh, I'm not the only one thinking this way. So I'm going to play a song from this band, his band, GPL. This song is called Bottled Message. So check it out. Here it comes.
Yeah.
And there it is. That was a weird ending. The yeah, you can pick up Anatomy of a Sailing Ship. Search out GPL Italy. You'll find them, and you can connect with them and go pick that up. So let's get on the show, everybody. Here he is, Francesco Marone, on the Apologue Podcast. Here it comes. Say that again so I recorded it, because that's pretty Marone.
Yeah, Marone. Yeah, that's my name.
What part of Italy are you from?
Well, I'm from the north, near Milan, actually. Mm-hmm. I live in a little city near Milan in the north, so it's pretty cold here right now, and my bandmates come from the same little city.
Yeah, because yeah. I have some friends in Torbigo, and I have Alessio from Place in the Sun. I don't know what town he's from, but I think it's around there.
Yeah, we played in Torbigo, and we know some... there's a band, I think they came from there, their line-out band.
Yeah.
Yeah, them. We're friends with them, yeah.
Yeah, so the community, the punk rock community in northern Italy, I've been going there with, I was going there in the early 2000s up until sort of the later 2000s. Okay. And I noticed that the community is a lot like my community, which is sort of, we're all buds, we all know each other, we're all tight-knit. There's obviously competition between bands, but at the same time, you're always trying to... promote each other.
Yeah, it's not a big community here. Mm-hmm. It used to be bigger, I think 10 years ago, 15 years ago, when we started as a band. You know, at that point, everyone played in a band. And punk rock was very, very popular. Mm-hmm. Much more than hardcore, as people think to hardcore right now, and now it's different. But I think that the level, the average level of bands now is better, but there are few bands,
yeah,
not many bands, yeah. So we all know each other, and it's. It's common to see the familiar faces at the gigs, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. but we're still trying to do our best because we know that it's a wheel and things go up and down in time.
Absolutely. Definitely. I was thinking when you're saying there's not so many bands, but the bands are better.
Yeah.
I think, it takes bands like you guys, though, to bring younger bands and sort of they look up to you and go, oh, I want to be like that. And then the community just mushrooms again and turns into a new community. And do you find that? Do you find like there's younger bands out there that want to sort of do what you guys do?
Well, more bands in the metal thing. They do the metal thing or hardcore. The modern type of hardcore, but yeah, there's a band that called Crosswise Decay, and they come from I think Firenze or down there, mm-hmm. and they're good. Yeah, I was thinking a few days ago about this thing and how you know we could help this community to grow up again. And I think that that's one thing that is missing right now, and it is the danger. Mm-hmm. And when I talk about the danger, is that I mean that when you're an adolescent, that's what you want, and that's something that brings you in a community, the gigs, going out for the first times. You know, you are for the first time in the world, and you're in the world through music, listening to music. I mean, that is something that really, you will always remember these experiences, if you know what I mean, if that makes sense.
First show, you're away from your you're out with your friends and you're seeing music that you better to try and explain. You've discovered this music, even though it's music that's been around for 30 years, it's now your music. And when it becomes your music, there's nobody else around that can no other kind of music that can sway you. You know, it's definitely it's a powerful thing going to your first real show. You right?
Yeah, that's my experience too. And you know, since I started playing music and I was 16, 15. Oh, I was 15. Well, I never stopped because the experience was so strong that I kept on wanting more of that kind of experience. And I can't see myself stop playing, 'cause you know it's a way of being with friends. It's a way I can, you know, meet new people, go around, new experiences, and I'm having more fun now than when I was 16, really. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree, because as you get a little older, you start understanding the realistic part of music. The realistic part of music is that I love it. I want to make it mine. I want to share it with people, but I'm not willing. This, I'm speaking about myself. Maybe I'm projecting onto you, but I'm not willing to compromise my ethics to be Bon Jovi.
Okay.
Right? Does that make sense? Or the other, do you want to be the biggest band in the world? I mean, there's no harm in that. There's no reason to have that, the goal.
Yeah. That's something we've been discussing with my bandmates. You know, we're always talking about where are we going now? What do we wanna do? And I think that what helped us in sticking together for so many years, because we've been playing since 1999 as a band, and that's a long fucking time, it's that, you know, the first thing that we care about is doing something that we love. That's the point. I mean, we're not talking together about we wanna become the next band that everybody knows or stuff like that. We never care about these things really. So I see my band always growing up, you know? It's a project that is always growing up, and I think we're getting better year after year.
Yeah,
So
definitely. 99, huh? So,
yeah.
wow. So, I don't see. I've only been the first time I went to Italy was with the Weakerthans in 2003. My band Foursquare opened for the Weakerthans, and that was in
Oh.
Bologna, in around Milan area, northern part, in this weird little club. And that's where I met Lissio from Place in the Sun for the first time. And that would have been 2000. No, actually, no, I'm putting two tours together. That was Weakerthans. Yes, we just did two or three shows in Italy. Second time I came through was with 10 Foot Pole in
Oh.
2003. And that's where we played on this weird little side of the hill thing up by north of Milan somewhere in a like wine area where they make wine.
Oh.
Yeah. Do you know what I'm talking about? It's this weird little venue.
Well, I don't know the place, but well, the Weakerthans are a great band,
Yeah.
and 10 Foot Pole too, and you know, it brings me good memories of when I listened for the first time to, it was called Rev, the album by 10 Foot Pole, and that's one of the albums, and the first song, it's called Never Look Back. Well, that's one song that really locked me in the punk rock thing.
Yeah. Yeah, we spent 30 days in a tour bus with them.
Oh.
It's not as fun as it sounds.
Why?
Well, you know what? It was fun. We had fun. We got along with them, but there's Canadian culture and American culture, and Canadians and Americans have two different points of view on how they operate socially, you know. And Canadians are inherently nice, and Americans are inherently give me mine. And this is really generalizing, because Dennis is probably one of the nicest people I know. But that's the sort of like, these are our bunks, and then you go over there, and that's your thing, and that's what I got. And that's what I get from two, like, you know, and obviously Canadian culture, Italian culture, we're different cultures, but we have a common, you know, we have a common agreement on things, you know, when it comes to music and things like that. But yeah, that was an interesting 30 days in a tour bus.
Yeah.
Touring
is great.
Yeah, oh yeah. Do you have any sort of... So you've obviously left... Have you left Italy to go play elsewhere? Have you traveled around?
Yeah, we've been playing in Germany, in France, and in Spain, and in Austria, last year. And we're planning on touring more, because it's something that we started doing only in the last few years. And I really don't know why, but I think that we had to wait for the right time to go out and be free and make it the best experience that we could. And you know, and it's something that is really great. We are friends more than a band, and so it's like being around with your family. And experiences new things, meeting new people. And, you know, it's a different way of living, because we all have our jobs and things to do. But, you know, you become a sort of animal when you are when you are around, and there's nothing that can stop you.
Yeah.
You are, we go with a camper, you know, and so we sleep in there, and you wake up in the morning and you know that you only have got to play, no worries, and really just driving and try to be in shape when you have to play. And that's it. I mean, when you go home, you are really tired. Because it's fun, but then you got to change your point of view on things, because you have to go back to the family or the stuff you got to do.
Responsibility.
Yeah.
When you're booking your own tours, I'm sure you're booking your own tours, there's a lot of work that goes into trying to get them all together to make everybody happy. And then getting the vehicle is only really the fun part. But all the work is like setting it up and calling people and emailing people. It's all done, hopefully, by the time you go to get in your vehicle and drive away, that everything is put into place. And, you know, and that's another thing that comes with age, because if you're 20 or if you're 18 years old and you want to go on tour, there's a lot of things that you don't tend to cover, like places to stay and whether or not the vehicle's going to make it. So yeah, I can understand waiting till the right time to go, because it should be enjoyable if you're doing it, you know, if for love, and you're doing it to put your music out there. You should be in the best possible scenario you can put yourself into, and traveling in a couple of cars and then borrowing everybody's gear, that's never any fun.
No, that's not fun. And I mean, there's a lot of work behind the scenes. Even if you're going outside of your country for a week, I mean, there's a lot of work there, because we are, my band GPL is, I think about it as a completely DIY thing. I mean, not because DIY is cool, but because that's how it is.
Yeah.
You know, we book our tours, we record our own music, we produce everything by ourselves. So, you know, that's something that I'm quite proud of. And but there is one guy in the band, and that's Alessio, and he's the one that is working behind the scene to make the tours and the gigs happen. And so my applause goes to him.
Yeah.
Because he's great, yeah.
Definitely. The and self-promotion and carrying yourselves as human beings on tour is important in DIY. DIY is just a loose term to say, you know. And like I said, there is nothing wrong with DIY, but there is a certain element of profession that you have to present to people as a DIY band. Whether it, you can't be a bunch of knuckleheads that drink beer and hit the cans off your head and, you know, get in fist fights. There is a work ethic that's involved with this whole, you know, DIY. And so I'm gathering that everybody sort of has a job in the band. Like Alessio is the one that sort of books and promotes. And what's your, are you the recording guy?
Yeah, I am the recording guy because I'm, you know, I'm really obsessed with with recording. Mm-hmm. I don't know why, but that's an OCD thing maybe. But it's the love for precision and, well, but yeah, that's an hobby that I take really seriously. Sometimes I produce bands in my spare time. But yeah, we all have our jobs. I'm a psychologist. And Alessio works in a shop and he sells electronics. We have our singer and bass player is a farmer. And the new guy in the band, that's a guitar player, well, he is a programmer.
He's a what, sorry?
So, a programmer.
Oh, so he
programs
does...
software, yeah.
Wow. You guys are a powerful team.
Yeah, I think that we all have something different to put in the band.
You're like a super group, like a super team. Like you should put, like, if you put like outfits on, like super, you know, you're a recording guy because you do something in recording is, because I do the same thing, is a lot to do with getting in people's minds and understanding, like, oh, what do you want, you know, and things like that. And so you've kind of taken it and put it a little bit into your hobby, and by the sounds of it, you got some pretty kick-ass gear too, right?
Yeah, I've been collecting gear, and I'm not a gear slut, but I've got a good pair of speakers. That's Adam A7, which are
For all you people out there listening, that's good.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's not so, it's not that expensive, but it's a good pair of speakers for producing and mixing. And then I got some preamps that I build, because I got into electronics and building and soldering my own stuff. And a lot of microphones. You know, I don't know if I can get here in the details.
Yeah.
But,
But it sounds like a good place to come record in Italy.
Well, I'm not the right person to say that.
Yes,
but
you are.
I
come
think,
on.
Okay. But, you know, there are some production. Well, our new last record, that's called Anatomy of a Sailing Ship, was recorded here in my basement, and you know, the basement is treated properly, and I got a mixing room, and you know, I'm really passionate about recording, so I try to put as much time as I can without going crazy, because you can really get in that circle while you keep on tweaking things, changing stuff. And I mean, that's not the point, because when you're producing too much, you're losing the feeling, because you're getting in a really technical territory, and that's not the point, because you got to the one who helps the emotional stuff come out better and translate better. I mean, that's the point in producing. That's not a, it's, I mean, it's really a psychological thing, because you got to understand what's the main emotion in the lyrics, in the music, and then you got to enhance that emotion. And that's the hard part. Yeah, really.
Well, we live in a time where you can make things perfect. You can record essentially a drum kit with mistakes and make it perfect. Now, I it's funny, like it's when you talk, it's like you're like the version of me in a different country 10 years ago, 20 years ago, because I record bands, but I've started pushing into trying to get live off the floor and living with that and being happy with it. Because, and I think it's more or less to prove a point to say, well, okay, there's fuck ups all over the song, but it feels good, you know? And that's that's a tough thing to sell in modern music, especially with technical like hardcore and things like where melodic hardcore stuff like that. People have a certain type of they have a they have their own perception about what that should be. And it's hard to sell like nitty gritty punk rock where it's like sounds good, but it's just played raw, you know? And the band that I know can do stuff like that is of course Propagandhi. They can do a lot of that stuff and they can play perfectly, but they made a lot of work to go and be that good, you know? So, but you hear stuff and you can hear that it's not completely tampered with as much as, say, I don't know, pick another record or something.
You are talking about Propagandhi, and I think that they're great musicians. Maybe, I'm sure they are more than just great musician. There's a genius in there. I've seen them live 3 times in Italy, and I was blown away. And this makes me think about the fact that, my favorite records are not the ones that sound better. Yeah, that's a fact. And I prefer raw music that's produced nicely with good ideas, nice things here and there, where you can see that everyone spent time and their emotion in it, but where the production is not killing the songs at the point that the songs now tend to sound all the same. Yeah, and I hate that. And I was thinking about the album About Time by Pennywise, and that's raw, but it's so tightly played that I feel it's not getting old for me, at least. And I keep on listening to that and banging my head and singing while I drive.
Mine's Rain and Blood by Slayer. I can listen to the first three songs on that record and I will drive faster. I could physically feel my heart beating faster. The energy is it just that is pure emotion. Like that's just blah. It's like I'm something yelling in your face for 35 minutes. Great album.
And I think that that's a point in music, and that's the it's easy to have good sounding music, but it takes practice and ability to be able to record something that is raw but it's modern at the same time. And I think that Propagandhi are a great example of that, you know, where the production is not killing the music.
When you record, you record other bands in your studio.
Yeah.
Do you have like a level of competence when people are coming in? Do you go and find them and say, I want you to come? Or would you record any band, even a band that kind of doesn't play well, and turn it into a project? Like, where do you sit in all of this?
Well, I'm not at the point of where I want to refuse to record, because this is starting as a hobby that I take really in a serious way, and I need experience. But I need experience, and I will always need experience. I'm not the person that thinks that, oh, I'll get to a point where I will be just right. Well, I'm never satisfied. So I've been doing this for more than 10 years. So I know what I'm doing, but at the same time, I know that working with another band, I will learn different things.
Yeah, that's a good perspective. Because I professionally recorded bands for a good 10 years up until about 10 years ago, and it just got really gritty, like gnarly on me. Like, I didn't have enough patience to work with bands that didn't really, yet they were my main income. So it was a very hard thing for me to sort of grasp, to say, oh, I need this money, but I don't like the band. So that's where I got torn with the whole idea of, well, I have to record this band, but I don't really like them. Neither are they just as bands or as people, you know? So you have these people in your place that you're like, oh, I don't really like them. So, you know, and now I guess 10 years, 15 years down the road, I've sort of go, I like that band, I want to work with that band, or I don't like that band and I don't need to work with that band. So, but, and I commend you for actually understanding, like, if I want to stay playing music, I need to sort of be in music, because you are essentially you haven't taken yourself completely out of the situation. Like, you've put, you find something in music that you enjoy, which is recording. And then you can still utilize all that passion for music that people have.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, my perspective is, how can I help this band with my production skills? What can I do for you? And obviously, there is another part that is, what can this band do for me? And I'm not talking about the money.
Yeah.
I'm talking about what can I learn working with this band. So it's a two-way thing.
And definitely, and the other tricky thing is not completely always staying in punk rock or into melodic stuff. Like, you gotta branch out, you know. Like, I work with country band now, I work with all sorts of crazy music, because you can get sort of stuck into a niche. There's a guy, his name's Matt Hyde, and he used to be in a band called Porno for Pyros, and he produced No Doubts, a couple of songs on that, that one with Spiderwebs. Like, he co-wrote some of those songs. Well, he was like this guy that played in this wacky sort of like art band with Perry Farrell, and then somehow turned into the guy that records metal. So somehow something happened where all of a sudden he's the metal guy recording, like, he recorded some Slayer, he recorded all this other stuff, like bands that you're like, whoa, it's just so not him, but he just found a niche, you know? And I wonder if he's out of it now, because I haven't talked to him in a long time. But that's sort of an idea, is just try to keep whatever you do and try to keep it spread across different genres. You obviously are not going to have clicky kick drums on a country record, but I don't know how much country goes through northern Italy. What kind of new country you rocking up there? Any?
No. I don't know.
Sounds like an American thing.
playing country. Yeah, that's an American thing. But I was thinking about the fact that Well, a good song is a good song.
I like that.
That's, yeah, and that's why, I mean, a good punk rock song, and I will take Bad Religion as an example of a band that is in punk rock but could have been a huge pop band. Yeah, why? Well, that's because the songs are good songs, are great songs, and you can play them with the piano, you can play them with the guitar.
Yeah.
You can do whatever you want with that songs. And the internet is there, you can see a lot of people playing that songs, those songs, in different ways. Why? Because these are just great songs. So, and even a producer who can help bands writing, well, you can play them as you want. No, if you got the right ideas and the production chops and things, and you know.
Yeah, well, there's that band Wilco that did a record, and they kept rewriting the same song over the period of the day until they came up with the version of that song that they wanted to stay with. And that is to me, it's hilarious where they can take one song and it'll be just straight up song, and then they can turn it into this wacky song, but it's the same song. Yeah. And that kind of blows my mind a little bit, because when I'm writing something, I always try to, I kind of have it in my head, but I would never consider it. I don't think my head's big enough to expand to the part where, okay, got to get this down and now I'm going to make it that. So that's stuff that, you know, we all got to work on, right? Like, I got to work on, like, it's a tricky proposition. Like, if someone said, hey, GPL, we want you to do an all children's nursery rhyme version of your record. Go do that. Okay, well, that's pretty daunting, right? So, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you can achieve that if you keep on listening to music. I know I got my favorite records of all time, and I keep on listening to them, but I try to be as open as I can, because you know, at the beginning I was only listening to punk rock. I started with Nirvana, and that's the door that we all came into music. We came from there. Yeah, and a lot of guys of my age came from there. And I was just listening to Nirvana. And then I started listening to NoFX. And from there, you know, this became a sort of obsession for me. I started learning all the lyrics. And when I mean every, in every song, I mean in every song, because I had to bring that thing inside of me. And, you know, but at the same time, I started playing violin and studying classical music. So, and I really love, you know, Neil Young, Leonard Cohen. That is something that I really love, that kind of music. Elliott Smith. So it's acoustic music. That is really and deeply emotional. And I think that punk rock is deeply emotional, even if, you know, people seem to concentrate on the fuck the government thing.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's really the important thing in punk rock. I think there's something really deep in punk rock and in the lyrics of some bands. I'm talking about Bad Religion and Pennywise, or, you know, a lot of bands that are really talking about life and how can you be alive in your life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was listening to, I just heard it on satellite radio. I heard Sorrow from Bad Religion.
Oh.
And that's not even a very old song. But I've been listening to Bad Religion since the 80s, and it's like, holy crap, they still, that's, you know what I mean? Because there's a time where you bounce into stuff like Bad Religion, then you bounce out. But then it's so funny to think that I'm 46, going on 47, driving in my nice car, listening to satellite radio, and up pops Bad Religion, and it immediately takes you right back to being 20 years old and not knowing what the hell you're doing. And then, you know, and you listen to that, those lyrics, and you're like, holy crap, they still, and they're older than me. Like, you know what I mean? Like, they still, like, they can touch an audience just through satellite radio. And that's, you know, a guy like me. And that's sort of an interesting thing about punk rock, is that it always sort of flips over on itself. And, you know, right now we're, I don't know where we're at with punk rock, but I understand that bands are putting out records, you know, and that's good, but everybody can put out records now. So is it, is that a good case to say that punk rock is still breathing and living and still, you know, happening? Because a guy like me, I have a nice house and I don't go downtown and watch shows like I used to. And so I'm tuned out. So, you know, and I guess you could speak for Italy that, you know, and you said that, well, the scene is smaller, but it's stronger. And that's a good sign that, that that's happening. But when you get older now in life, so you're going to be, are you married? Do you, are you living, do you have children? Are you going, are you thinking about stuff like that?
Yeah, I'm thinking about it, but I don't have it right now. Mm-hmm. So, you know, well, I think that music helps you in staying young, but at the same time, it should serve the purpose of helping you grow.
Yeah,
it might sound strange, but I think that's how it goes. And yeah, you know, at the beginning, well, music was everything. That was the way that I started looking at life in a new way.
Yeah,
it was through music. That's why I'm so connected with this music, because it offered me a point of view on stuff that was not that easy to understand. And then something will change for sure, and has changed. I changed the reasons why I play, but I really think that I'm more into it than when I was 16.
Mm-hmm. Well, explain sort of the difference between being older and younger. I mean, obviously, you're smarter as you get older. That's supposed to happen. You're supposed to get smarter, yeah. But is it perspective about the realistic part of music? Is that what sort of got, is changed your opinion from 16 to present?
Well, I don't know. When I was 16, the bands were, you know, it was like seeing God on stage. Mm-hmm. It was something that was so much bigger than me. Well, now it's not something that is bigger than me. I try to be a part of it as much as I can. And you know, producing bands is part of that change in the point of view, where you want to learn how to, I mean, how can this band, these drums in my favorite record play this way, be played this way? How do they achieve this sound that drives my emotions? Well, and you start to see things in a different perspective when you start asking yourself these things. And I want to know what lurks behind the music. It's not just, okay, I want to be a part of this thing. I want to be the guy who goes to the gigs. I want to be like the bands that I love. Mm-hmm. No, I think that that's the difference. Oh, no, the difference is, when you produce something or when you just listen to something, it's more of being active and passive. I think that's the difference as I see it.
Wow, that's so I like the way you explain things, because you explain with little words the most important things about that. That's pretty cool, because I'm a windbag, you know. I talk about, and then occasionally I come up with little tidbits of wisdom. But I mean, just in this past 5 minutes, you've dropped some stuff there. Like, holy crap, that's made me think. So, you know, thank you. That's pretty cool stuff. So, and how do I get myself back into that? I found that as I got older, my expectations of what music can give back to me got smaller. So I thought, well, you know, 15 years ago, someone told me, oh, I had a record deal and I had touring in Europe and had record out in Japan. But people kept saying that this is going to be huge. This is going to be great. And a lot of people were telling me that this is going to be important stuff in music, and it's going to help, you know, push this little thing called the music business along. And it didn't happen. And I wasn't necessarily surprised, but at the same time, I thought, I need to sort of not put all of my emotion into what music can give back to me. I need to put into music, because I'm not willing to stop that. But I need to make sure that whatever I get out of music, I'm okay with. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I think that there's a point where the point of view changes. Mm-hmm. And I really can't recall when it happened. But I know that it happened. But, you know, there's something that connects the one that I was many years ago and the one that I am right now, because I know that that's a different person. Mm-hmm. And the main thing that remain through all these years is music and playing in GPL. Mm-hmm. I mean, everything changed. Girlfriends, my own, everything.
Yeah.
Friends that I've lost. But the music is the main thing that remained. There's no other thing. Everything changed, but I'm still in the same band. And in my area, we are the last band remaining from that era. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I ask myself why it happened. But in a world that started changing really fast, that's something that we always looked at as a thing that we should keep alive in our life. And, well, and that's it. And so here we are.
You've explained the whole synopsis of this show, which is, you know, it's like my head's getting blown up over here, because my whole reason for doing this show was to say, okay, here you are now, and that was you then. What part of then is still current today, and what part of then did you drop or leave behind to make yourself either a better or worse person? And that's the show. I mean, so you kind of nailed it. Like, you should just come on as a co-host, because that's exactly what I've been talking to people about over the past 2 years, is that there's been...
Oh, great.
Yeah, so there's always been that common thread, like, who are you now, and what are you, what were you then, you know? So, and it's, you know, and I was thinking about the other bands that were around your area, that they all went through the same changes you did, only they chose different paths that put them into directions of, and I say this in for the lack of a better explanation, but normality. Because being normal to some people is being fulfilled. And being normal to me, it's almost like I look at it from the distance and go, that's normal. What if I was that guy, you know? And what what would happen if I turned into that guy? Would I like that guy? Probably not. But a lot of the bands that you played with, the other bands that came through, they didn't have that, I don't want to say staying power, but they didn't have the drive and the passion and the love and the appreciation of music that guys like you do, because they weren't willing to make life sacrifices, you know, and that's, music is that. You take a sacrifice, you know, for financial reasons, or you take, you know, or you do things like, oh, I'll go out and play some shows. We won't make any money, but it'll be fun, you know, and, but also at the same time, you've gone out and you've got yourself a trade or like a real job, but at the same time, you've still managed to keep it all balanced. That's powerful stuff, and not a lot of people can actually do stuff like that. It drives some people crazy, like literally. I'm sure you know.
yeah. But I think that's because, you know, we all have different representations of ourselves. We're not just one thing. We are more than one thing. And sometimes the things that we do, you know, a lot of people, when they talk to me, they say, oh, really, you play punk rock and you are a psychologist. How can you do that? But to me, music is a really psychological thing. I think there's a lot of psychology involved in punk rock lyrics, for example. And so to me, I always try to find a way to connect these two parts of me. And in the end, I don't think they're different. I mean, I'm the same person. But obviously in different situations, you show different things. I mean, that's not, it's more than just a mask that you put on.
Yeah.
It's, you know, playing with yourself and trying to do the thing that you're doing in that moment the best that you can with your own resources. So, but it's not that easy, but that's an interesting thing that, okay, I'm doing that. This is my job and my passion. But at the same time, I can do something that is seem really different. And that's the fun part.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but I enjoy doing things that people can't think they won't connect well. And trying to find a way to say, this is connecting because I'm doing it. So they're connected in some way.
Yeah. What is your level of profession with psychology? What area do you work in?
Well, in next year, I'll be a psychoanalyst because I studied at the university and then I'm studying psychotherapy. Well, in... well, you know, there are different psychologists and different waves. And the one that I find that is most interesting, at least to me, is the one by Jung. So a psychoanalysis of dreams and stuff like that, the subconscious and that, you know, it's an... I can call it an evolution of what Freud started.
Okay.
And yeah. And sometimes it's strange, you know, when your job is working on dreams. Because it seems like it's something from another world. Or you are a sort of oracle, stuff like that.
But well, they have these books, you know, you open the book and you actually go to the topic of your dream. And then it says, oh, I dreamt that my car was out of control and I was in the back seat. Well, that explains that your life is out of control. Like there are certain things that I read up on, but I haven't, I'm sure it's all bullshit, you know.
Yeah, it don't work. Doesn't work like that. No book can tell what a dream means.
Yeah,
it's more about the feeling that it's in there.
Yeah,
and discovering this feeling with your patients is real fun, and it's art, but it's fun. Because if I dream of, I don't know, a shark, if you dream a shark, it might be a totally different thing.
Mm-hmm. Based on the context of what's happening.
Yeah, and based on the dreamer. Mm-hmm. I mean, a shark is always a shark.
Yeah.
But the way that I see a shark is different.
Right.
Than the way that you can, you know?
Yeah.
To me, it might be fear, and for you, it might be a fear that you enjoy, or you feel like a shark sometimes.
Yeah.
Well,
years ago,
really subjective.
Yeah. Years ago, I had I quit cigarettes. I quit smoking, and I was doing the nicotine patch.
Oh.
And what I found out, like later on, is you're not supposed to put them on while you're sleeping. Because you can have like dreams and like, and I was having dreams that were literally movies. Like if I could somehow tap into my brain and there had plot twists, there was characters. It was the most real life dreams I've ever had in my entire life. And then as the weeks went on using the patch, the dreams slowly but surely got less and less because my body was becoming, was accustomed to that. But yeah, man, that nicotine patch is like a good way to get some dreams going, man. Even if you don't smoke, you should put them on your...
It's like LSD.
That's what I was going to say. You could rebrand it and put like mushrooms on it and say, go for a trip, you know, patch, you know. And it was crazy. Like there were some amazing dreams and none of them I could recite to you now. But they were just like these most intense feelings waking up, and I wish I'd put a book and a note and a pencil beside my pen, because I would write down this movie and go pitch it to major movie theaters if I could, like, you know, say hey. But so dream analysis, that's something. And so how many years do you need? Are you going through university? Are you say you're almost done, right?
Well, university was over in 2007 mm-hmm. for me, and it's 5 years in Italy, mm-hmm. and then you got to study psychotherapy, mm-hmm. and that's 4 to 8 more years,
yeah.
and you go in analysis yourself before working with patients.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you work on your dreams, so you get to know yourself better.
Mm-hmm.
And because, you know, otherwise you will be projecting yourself.
That's what I do all the time. I do that all the time.
Yeah, but I mean, that's how everyone works.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everyone. And that's a big thing because, you know, falling in love is a projection. But mm-hmm. when you fall in love, you always forget about the fact that is a projection, and one day you get to know that, okay, I always think that this girl was perfect and is still perfect, but is different from mm-hmm. what I was thinking about maybe at the beginning. That's a common example.
Yeah.
So it's nice to project our things on the outside.
Yeah, because
I mean,
when
music is a projection.
Yeah, and when you project a conversation onto somebody, you're trying to say, "I get what you're I know where you're coming from. I understand you. So here, I'm going to put my feelings onto you." I mean, I know a very little bit of just from whatever about things like that, and just from you know, I think a lot of that comes with age too. Some of the good habits in interacting with people, because essentially every time you meet somebody, you're interacting with them for the, you know, for the first time, essentially. That impression that you give to that person is important, you know, because you can't get that back, you know, and that's what I think projection sort of jumps in there at that point and says, oh, I'm just like you, you know, or you're nervous or something like this, you know, so it's an interesting concept, but I like when you say, yeah, music, you are projecting, you're essentially literally projecting something onto somebody. Yeah.
Yeah, that's music. It's a fantasy.
Yeah.
And you know, it's something that you have inside your heart or mind or whatever, and you're trying to project it on to the world.
And
that's the point, is to give a shape to something that doesn't have a shape. So when you try to give it a shape, it changes, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
So a song is never exactly the thing that you had inside of yourself.
Mm.
But it's a form,
mm-hmm.
a picture
mm-hmm.
of that thing.
Someone explained to me that sometimes music is a form of hypnosis, because if you're singing words and someone can sort of get in tune with those words and paint a picture in their mind of what's happening, you're essentially being hypnotized. You know, at a show, that's why everybody kind of raise their hands and rock in a formation like this, is that you're essentially putting everybody into your brainwaves. You're hypnotizing these people. Same thing with comedy, stand-up comedy. Like, if you laugh at a joke, that means you're putting yourself in the position of that person telling you a joke. So, as for lyrics, I always like lyrics that I could make my own stories up with, you know, and some of the on-the-nose, like, you know what I mean? When it's like just, it's put in front of you, laid out, and explained to you perfectly. Those are never lyrics that I really could appreciate, because I get that.
Yeah.
Or maybe I'm not smart enough to know the underlying method or, mm-hmm. you know, message. But yeah, it's a form of hypnosis.
Yeah, and, you know, we're talking about the connection that the music creates. And sometimes it happens to me when I'm at the gig and see some bands, and at some point I find myself in a different state of mind, where it's like, well, the world is opening up in front of me. And that's a strange thing that only happens to me with music. It's rare, but it happens. And I know, okay, I'm part of this thing. Come on, let's go in the crowd and be a part of it. And then the other interesting thing you were talking about is, I mean, I don't like lyrics that are too clear.
Mm-hmm.
I like when someone obviously is talking about a fact in his life, but is not described as a fact. It's described as a story. It could be real or not, but who cares?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, if that thing is getting to me, who cares if it's real or not? So I never liked, I like bands that talked about politics, but I think that their better songs, the best songs by them, are the ones where they are talking about themselves in a symbolic way, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. It does.
I think, yeah, that's my point of view.
Yeah. When they're explaining themselves, who they are, they're hoping other people will relate to it, I guess, or that's why they're, you know, that would be a no-brainer, is that here's my point of view, here's our point of view. But if you're talking about politics, then you're talking about other people's points of views. And then, so by saying something, you're essentially turning yourself into a politician, because, you know, mm-hmm. You're talking about, one who won't be named, but he's south of here and he's got yellow hair. But we'll talk about that. You know, let's talk about that guy for 3.5 minutes. Well, you're basically telling people exactly what they want to hear. So when you're explaining yourself lyrically, who you are, people can sort of take what they want from it. I agree with you. That's more powerful to me to hear, you know. But also, there's also some lyrics that just, they're kind of like tangents and they just go on and you're trying to figure out how that works. And a lot of people said Bob Dylan is the best lyricist in, you know, in history. But maybe I just wasn't high enough. Like, I just don't get it. Like, I don't get it. But then there's words from John Lennon that, like, completely blow me away. And they're not even words. You're like, they don't even make sense. But So it's all where, you know, you're willing to let that hit that part of your brain and say, oh, okay, I get this, you know, where I can put a story together in my head, because essentially what you're doing is you're just telling someone a story, or you're giving them a point of view, or you're giving them a scenario to look at, and then saying, what do you get? You know, it'd be neat if we could all tap into our own brains and see what story's being created from any Beatles song, you know, so. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, I understand, you know, you got a bit of a time crunch here, and my, I really, really do appreciate you coming on the show, and, you know, because it's sort of the reason I do shows like this, that this show is to sort of talk to people about what their perception of music is, and I particularly enjoy it when someone has it's in check. Does that make sense? Like you know where you sit in all of that, Yeah, let's, I mean, anytime, we didn't even talk about your band, I mean, but I'm going to play a song, you know, I got some music, so I'll play a song, but the conversation was really good. I really appreciate you doing the show, man.
Well, thanks for having me. It was really, really interesting, because, you know, in this world, everyone is talking, and everyone is bringing something to the world, or at least thinks that is bringing something to the world. But there's value in sitting here and talking with you and your experiences, and you doing the same with me. I mean, that's the thing that I really appreciate.
Well, that's great, man. Good luck with you, and keep in touch, and you got a floor to sleep on if you ever come to Canada.
Oh, great. I'd love to get there.
Anytime.
Really?
Come on by.
Yeah.
We're just a plane ride away.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks again.
Okay, bye.
Francesco Marone. See, I wish I knew Italian, because I don't know Italian, but I know a lot of Italians. And, I haven't, you know what, I don't think, unless it's on this side of the Atlantic, I've never met an Italian person in Italy that I haven't always had a good time with. I've always had a good time with people from Italy. You know, I've had some of the most fun in my life in Italy. Yeah, so I don't know why I'm saying this now, but so that was a great fun time with Francesco. I wish him all the luck in his band, and his band GPL is awesome. You heard the song at the start, right? So go pick it up and go follow his band. And, you know why? Because you can be the cool person. You can be like, hey, have you heard of this band, GPL? They're from Italy. And it'll be like, what? And you're like, yeah, they're from Italy. I follow them now. They're like my Facebook friends. So be cool. Was that my cool voice? That was my cool voice. Everybody, thanks so much for listening to the show. It's really cool to know that there are people listening to the show from other parts of the country and also other parts of the world. I have a great time doing this show. I've since moved my studio back down to my basement so I can actually make a little bit more noise than I did before. It's actually getting on to like midnight, so I can actually still talk and have a good time. Next week, let me check to who I got next week. I know I have, because I've built up a few episodes now, so I'm kind of set up for what's happening in the next couple of weeks. At least next week I have my friend Carmelo Loporto from Germany, so this is like a world one now. Like, and the week after that is going to be Bill Priddle, who plays in Trouble Charger, and the week after that is probably, I haven't recorded it yet, is going to be my friend Liam Colleen, who manages a band called USS as well as the Tea Party. So everybody, thanks so much for listening to the show. Again, I'll see you next week. Well, have a good time. Have a good week. Stay warm.